Welcome to another deep dive. When you text a friend a link, maybe it's a news article or like a funny video or even a dashboard showing your latest gaming stats, there's this kind of unspoken social contract, right?
Right, yeah. You're handing them a piece of your reality.
Exactly. And you expect that when they reply, "Oh wow, that's crazy," they actually looked at the thing you sent them. You expect a shared context.
Yeah, that they didn't just ignore it.
Right. But imagine if you found out your friend never actually clicked the link at all. Like, instead, they just looked at the words and the web address, guessed what the page might be about, and then confidently fabricated this highly specific, entirely fake response just to, I don't know, keep the conversation going.
You'd probably stop trusting anything they ever said to you.
Completely. I
Yeah.
mean, you'd be like, "Are you okay?" But until the V.0.7 update back in February 2026, this massive breach of trust was exactly how this AI agent named Mio interacted with the web. So today we're tearing apart the developer log behind that exact update to figure out how you force an AI to, well, to stop pretending and start actually reading.
And the stakes here are incredibly high for AI architecture, honestly, because we are talking about moving an agent from being just an isolated text generator to an active participant in the real world.
Yeah.
Before this update, Mio was committing what is arguably the most destructive error an AI can make, which is hallucinating verifiable fact.
Yeah, and the developer's log provides this perfect, honestly kind of agonizing example of this. So a user could send Mio a link to the card game results page, right? The URL was something like gd.x0x.ai.
Right, a specific game state.
Exactly. And Mio had absolutely no mechanism to fix the content of that web page. None. The URL was just sitting there as raw text in the context window. But instead of just saying, "Hey, I don't know what this is," Mio would look at the URL, recognize it was related to a game, and just invent a
He
reality.
would just make it up.
Yes, it would reply with something incredibly specific, like 57.1% win rate, 8 wins.
Which, I mean, that's mechanically fascinating if you understand how large language models actually work underneath.
How so?
Well, the AI sees the string gd.ax0x.ai, tokenizes it, and maps it to its internal weights regarding gaming statistics.
Yeah.
It isn't trying to deceive you, really. It's just trying to satisfy the prompt by generating a statistically probable continuation.
So it knows users want stats when they share game links, so it just generates them.
Exactly. It's pattern matching.
Okay, let's unpack this because it feels like a psychological breaking point for the user. It's like a friend pretending they read an article you sent them and they start making up quotes. Like, if it lies about something I can verify in 2 seconds by just clicking my own link, I'm never going to trust it to, say, summarize a 50-page legal contract or manage my calendar,
Right, the illusion of competence just shatters completely.
So what does this all mean for user psychology? Like, why is confidently lying so much more damaging than just admitting failure?
What's fascinating here is this concept of verified trust. When an AI generates a poem, we're evaluating its creativity, right? And we offer a lot of leeway for that.
Yeah.
But when we feed it our own data, like a link, we already know the contents of. We are testing its reliability. We are establishing a baseline. So honesty and failure is really a cornerstone of reliable AI design. A companion that invents easily verifiable data is just inherently untrustworthy.
Which makes sense why the very first thing the developer did in this update wasn't actually teaching Mio to read the link, but teaching Mio how to fail gracefully.
Yeah, you have to stop the bleeding first.
Right. They programmed this highly specific failure notice for when the system truly cannot access a page. It outputs a bracketed system message in Chinese saying, essentially, "The user shared a link, but the web page content could not be read."
Because admitting ignorance establishes clear boundaries. It signals to the user that the system operates within the realm of reality. And if it cannot access reality, it throws an error rather than, generating a fiction.
But admitting ignorance is only a stopgap, right? I mean, to actually solve the problem, the developer realized a simple fetch request was basically useless against the modern complex web.
Oh, completely useless.
And that constraint forced them to engineer this sophisticated, multi-tiered architecture that they call the three-tier waterfall pipeline. Because the internet isn't just one type of document anymore. It's this messy mix of static text, dynamic JavaScript, interactive web apps.
Exactly. If you just use a standard HTTP GET request, like what your browser does when it first contacts a server, a lot of modern web pages just return a blank HTML skeleton.
Just empty tags.
Yeah, just a skeleton with a massive script tag. There is literally no text to read until that JavaScript executes. So a single extraction method is guaranteed to fail a large percentage of the time.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because they built this escalation path. So Tier 1 is the fast path. It uses an external service called Jaina Reader.
Right.
Mio takes the user's URL, sends it to r.jaina.ai, and ideally gets back this beautifully clean, markdown formatted text. And it's built for pure speed.
Yeah, it has a strict 10-second timeout.
A 10-second timeout, and it truncates the response at 3,000 characters to keep the context window manageable. Mm. So for a standard static web article, this handles the job instantly.
But the brilliance of this pipeline isn't just utilizing Jaina, you know, it's the automated routing logic. Like, how does the system autonomously decide if Tier 1 actually succeeded?
Right, because it needs to know when to escalate.
Exactly. The developer instituted this strict design rule, which is the 100 characters of useful content threshold.
This is such a smart safeguard. Because, like, a fetch request can technically be successful. Like, the server returns a 200 OK status code, but the content is completely useless to the AI.
Right, you might just get the title of the page in a pop-up banner.
Yeah, something like, "We value your privacy, please accept our cookies." And that obviously doesn't count as reading the article.
Precisely. If Tier 1 pulls back less than 100 characters of actual content, the pipeline flags it as a failure and immediately escalates to Tier 2.
And Tier 2 brings out the heavy machinery. It does a browserless scrape.
Right, because since Jaina failed, the system assumes the page is relying heavily on JavaScript to render its content dynamically.
Like a single-page application built in React or Vue or whatever.
Exactly. So Tier 2 actually spins up a headless browser. It launches an invisible, automated instance of Chromium, fully renders all that complex JavaScript, waits for the network traffic to settle down, and then rips the text directly from the final document object model.
It essentially forces the page to fully hydrate before extracting the data.
Yeah, but even that has limits, right? What if the user links to a financial dashboard composed entirely of dynamic charts?
Or an infographic.
Or a Figma design mockup. Even a headless browser scraping the DOM for text is going to hit that 100-character threshold and fail.
Which triggers Tier 3, which the developer calls the nuclear option.
The nuclear option, yeah.
If there's no text to be found, Tier 3 takes a literal PNG screenshot of the fully rendered web page and pipes it directly through Mio's existing vision module. The developer actually reused a describe image function from an older update, I think V.0.5, so the AI can physically look at the screenshot and generate a text description of what it sees.
And all of this escalation happens entirely behind the scenes. Whether you're talking to Mio on Telegram, where it runs through a process batch, function capable of handling up to 5 deduplicated URLs at once.
Wow, 5 at once.
Yeah, up to 5. Or on the web chat interface, using prepare chat context, it all funnels through a single browse URLs function. It manages the fallbacks, ensures one broken link doesn't crash a whole batch, and feeds the final context to the AI.
Okay, I have to ask about the architecture choice here, though. If the vision module sees the page exactly like a human does, like taking a high-resolution screenshot of the final rendered reality, why build this whole waterfall? Why not just use Tier 3's screenshot option for every single link?
Right.
Like, why mess around with Jaina or spinning up headless Chromium to scrape text if the vision model guarantees you never miss anything visual?
It comes down to cost and efficiency. It's the difference between, say, reading the text of a book yourself versus hiring a photographer to take high-resolution photos of every page and then paying an analyst to study the photos to tell you what the book says.
Oh, wow.
In the world of machine learning, processing text is incredibly cheap and lightning fast. Large language models process text natively as tokens, but vision models require massive amounts of compute.
Right.
They have to break an image down into patches, embed every single patch, and run it through a massive multimodal transformer network.
So it's just this enormous computational tax.
A massive one. It's slower, it consumes significantly more memory, and it costs exponentially more to run at scale. So the 100-character threshold is really an elegant automated routing mechanism. It balances speed and accuracy without the user ever knowing which tier was used.
It attempts the cheapest, fastest method first.
Exactly. It only pays the computational tax of a heavy vision model if the data absolutely demands it.
But, you know, as any engineer reading this log knows, a pipeline can be brilliant in theory, and it can even pass all 23 automated tests they wrote in browse.test.ts.
Oh, the tests. Yeah.
Tests covering URL extraction, fallbacks, and end-to-end flows. But theoretical perfection shatters the moment it makes contact with production reality.
Production is a totally different beast.
Right. Production environments inevitably reveal the invisible stress fractures in a system. and this deployment immediately ran into a massive one. The developer details this production-breaking bug in a file called packages-shared-src-db-client.ts.
Ah, yes, the proxy bug.
Proxy bug. It literally crashed the system's memory retrieval and personality extraction.
Yeah, that was a tough one.
So in JavaScript, a proxy acts essentially as an interceptor for an object, right? The developer had set up a proxy to route database connections, and it was easily handling standard property lookups, intercepting requests like connection.query. Whenever the code used standard dot notation, the proxy's internal get trap caught it and handled it perfectly.
Because a get trap is designed specifically to intercept property access on an object.
Exactly. And it had been working flawlessly for months. But during this update, a dependency called Postgres.js utilized tag template syntax for its SQL queries.
Right, which changes how the engine reads it entirely.
Yeah. Instead of a standard function call, it looked like this backtick syntax, squile, followed by select from users in backticks. In JavaScript, a tag template literal doesn't just look up a property. It passes the template strings and expressions as arguments, basically treating the tag itself as a function to be executed.
And that is exactly where the architecture broke.
Yeah.
The developer had initialized the proxy with a basic object as its target, just an empty set of curly brackets. Right. But an object is not a function. So when Postgres.js tried to execute the tag template, the JavaScript engine tried to invoke the proxy. But because the target was an object, and because the proxy lacked an apply trap, which is specifically required to intercept function calls, the entire operation just threw a fatal error.
The fix was conceptually tiny but mechanically profound. They just had to change the proxy target from an empty object to an empty function and manually add that missing apply trap so it knew how to route execution calls, not just property lookups.
It's wild how one tiny syntax nuance deep in a dependency can bring an entire complex AI persona to its knees.
It really is. Yeah. Why are these invisible until they aren't bugs, like the proxy issue, so common when building complex AI applications?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, it highlights the fragility of these systems. We tend to anthropomorphize AI as this monolithic, fluid brain, but underneath the conversational interface, it is a rigid house of cards built on hyper-specific software writing rules. A single missing function trap halts the entire illusion.
And the headaches didn't even stop with the database. There is this incredible debugging story right after they fix the proxy. So the developer finally deploys the entire update, pushes the URL browsing feature live, and immediately tests it by sending that exact same card game link we talked about earlier.
A true test.
Right, and Mio still hallucinated the stats and completely failed to read the link.
Oh, you can imagine the dread. You spend days building a three-tier pipeline, you deploy the code, the logs say everything is functioning, but the end user result is exactly the same failure you started with.
The developer thought the entire deployment was broken. But the real reason was so much more frustrating. They looked at the timestamps and realized the test URL was sent at 3.03 a.m.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that was minutes before the deployment actually went live. So when the agent replied with the hallucination, the developer just typed, "Try again." But that retry message didn't actually contain the URL.
Right, because the new upgraded function went looking for a link in the immediate context of the retry message, found nothing, and so Mio just reverted to its default behavior of guessing based on its statistical weights.
It's like installing a brand new high-tech mailbox that instantly reads your mail to you, but complaining you aren't getting anything because you're repeatedly checking yesterday's delivery.
That's a great analogy. It's the disconnect between isolated unit testing and temporal reality. Developers are dealing with asynchronous state machines masquerading as continuous human conversations.
Right, we experience a chat thread as a persistent, unbroken timeline.
But the AI has no persistent brain. Every time you send a message, the system has to package up the recent history and feed it to a completely stateless model. If a URL is too far back in the context window, or if a retry logic only submits the very last user string, the AI literally cannot see the data. It can only process the inputs it receives in its current isolated micromoment. Old messages do not retroactively gain new capabilities.
So once the developer realized this temporal bug and actually resent the link in a fresh message, the system worked beautifully. The generator instantly extracted 16 lines of precise game state player names, scores, bomb sequences, the final winner.
Everything they needed.
Yeah, the AI read the context and described it flawlessly without a single hallucination. The mechanical problem of truth was basically solved.
Which naturally pushes the developer toward the next frontier. As we move to the final section of the log, looking ahead to the V0.1.0 update, the focus shifts entirely. Having solved the factual uncanny valley of hallucinating links, they begin wrestling with a much more complex form of truth. The emotional uncanny valley of the AI's personality itself.
Yes. The developer notes that all of Mio's current persona presets are generated by an AI. And a friend read them and immediately pointed out that they just don't sound real. The developer synthesized this perfectly. They said AI generates volume, but humans generate voice.
That's a brilliant way to put it. An AI can output thousands of words of deep backstory in seconds. But it lacks the subtle contradictions, the specific grounded colloquialisms, and the emotional weight that a human writer naturally embeds.
AI text tends to regress toward a hyper-competent, generic mean.
Exactly. It all sounds a bit fake.
So the obvious solution seems to be, you know, just give users a blank text box and let them write their own custom personas from scratch. But the developer realizes that is a massive trap. They note that 99.9% of users are either too lazy to write a robust persona, or worse, they will write contradictory prompts that actively break the illusion.
Right. Because if a user prompts the system with, "You are a cripplingly shy introvert who loves giving fiery public speeches to thousands of people," the LLM's attention heads are going to try to satisfy two completely divergent semantic clusters.
It just doesn't compute.
The logic core fractures. The output becomes either wildly oscillating between the two traits or flattens out into a confusing generic middle ground. It destroys immersion.
So to solve this, the developer proposes a tiered product system. For most users, they will provide heavily structured, fill-in-the-blank templates written by actual humans. You pick a base personality, define a few key memories, maybe select a relationship dynamic.
It provides rigid structure to prevent the user from creating chaos.
Right. But full, open-ended custom personas, those will be gated behind a premium tier. The developer hypothesizes that a user's financial investment naturally correlates with their creative investment. If they are paying for the feature, they're far more likely to take the time to engineer a coherent, high-quality prompt.
It is a brilliant way to use business tiering as a technical quality control mechanism for the AI's context window.
But the part of the notes that completely flipped my perspective was a conversation the developer had with their friend about interactive storytelling. Their friend got incredibly excited about using these AI personas for tabletop RPG scenarios.
Like murder mysteries or adventure campaigns.
Exactly. And in those environments, the AI needs more than just a quirky voice. It needs what they call structured narrative state. It needs to manage hidden knowledge, track specific goals, and crucially, it needs the ability to lie convincingly to the human player.
Which represents a massive paradigm shift from the entire first half of this developer log.
Right, wait a minute. We just spent this entire deep dive exploring how the developer meticulously engineered a three-tier waterfall pipeline to stop Mio from lying about web links. They viewed hallucinating a card game win rate as a massive breach of trust. Now, for these games, they want to engineer the explicit ability to lie convincingly.
This raises an important question, right? It requires separating the concept of lying as a bug from lying as a feature. Hmm. When Mio hallucinated the card game stats, it was lying out of ignorance. It lacked the data, so it pattern matched a fabrication to fulfill the prompt.
It's an unearned, lazy deception.
Precisely. That is a bug. It destroys trust because the user is operating under the expectation of verified reality. But in a tabletop RPG or a structured murder mystery, deception is the core mechanical feature of the simulation.
Right. If you're talking to the murderer.
If the AI is playing the role of the murderer and you ask it where it was on the night of the crime, it must lie to you. But it isn't lying out of ignorance. It is lying based on a tightly controlled structured narrative state. It possesses the hidden knowledge of the truth, but is selectively presenting falsehoods based on its character's programmed motivations.
Oh, that makes so much sense. Hallucination is when the AI is fooling itself because it can't see the data. Deception, in a gaming context, is when the AI sees all the data perfectly, but is actively trying to fool you within the agreed-upon rules of the simulation.
One is a catastrophic failure of the architecture. The other is the ultimate expression of control over it.
Wow. We have covered a massive amount of technical and philosophical ground today. We started with Mio fabricating a 57.1% win rate out of thin air, which forced the creation of a three-tier waterfall pipeline that routes URLs through Gina Reader, headless Chromium browsers, and heavy vision models, all governed by that clever 100-character threshold.
And we waded through the weeds of production deployment, seeing how a simple tag template syntax could break a JavaScript proxy by missing an apply trap, and how testing the right code against an old context window can make a developer question their own sanity.
Yeah, checking yesterday's mail. And we ended on the frontier of AI personality, contrasting the generic volume of AI with the specific voice of humans and looking at a future of RPG storytelling and premium persona generation.
It's quite a journey.
For you listening, whether you are building your own AI tools, prepping for a technical architecture meeting, or just trying not to be fooled by an LLM, understanding how a machine actually reads a link really changes how you interact with these systems. Shared links are no longer lies waiting to happen. They are genuine context.
It fundamentally changes things. You stop seeing it as a magic oracle and start seeing the rigid boundaries and routing logic that define its world.
You really do. But it also leaves us with something much deeper to chew on. We started this deep dive talking about that unspoken social contract, sending a link to a friend expecting a shared reality and the betrayal you feel if they fake their response.
Right.
But think about the future the developer is building toward with those interactive narratives. If we eventually perfect these systems, if an AI can maintain a flawless narrative state, remember every single interaction, perfectly mimic the nuance of a human voice, and convincingly deceive you as a character in a game, how will we, as humans, ever be able to distinguish that meticulously engineered illusion from a genuine connection?